Welcome, everyone, to the Average Ontario Anglers Fishing Podcast. This is actually episode 48, and there's something special about this episode, Andrew. Did you know that this is our one-year anniversary?
I was just thinking that, actually, today. I was at work, and I'm like, man, it's crazy how far we've come in, like, about a year and a half. I'm like, no, wait, we didn't start recording until end of February last year. So this is exactly, like, the one-year mark.
Yeah, so 1 year. And I thought for the one-year anniversary, we would have a super awesome special episode. So this is a person, our guest today, that I've wanted to have on the podcast for a long time, and I never thought he'd do it, but we have today Arthur from Angling Art. How are you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
We're going to introduce you a little bit more after Andrew's interesting fishing fact before we get into the podcast. So every week we have an interesting fishing fact, which is a random fact that is either funny or educational. And this week, Andrew has it. So, without further ado, dazzle us, Andrew.
This is a random one. I came to me because I was watching some Instagram. I got down the rabbit hole, and I was like, that's weird. And then I decided to do more research into other weird things. So, we're going to talk about, like, edible fish. Now, I say edible fish because if you live, you know, around Lake Ontario, most people would agree you don't want to eat the fish that comes out of it. But let's talk about some really weird dishes. So, like, for me, when I think of eating fish, first thing that comes to mind is fish and chips, right? So besides fish and chips, Arthur, like, what's your favorite, let's say, fish recipe that you like?
You're going to laugh at this, guys, both you and Jesse, but I'm allergic to fish.
Really?
So as someone who loves to go fishing and stuff like that, I'm automatically catch and release.
So your favorite fish is a Swedish fish to eat, all right? And okay.
Yeah. Oh.
And how about yourself, Jesse? If you had to choose, like, a fish recipe that would be your favorite, excluding fish and chips, what would it be?
Honestly, I'd say nostalgically, it's probably like my grandpa, my dad used to take me trout fishing. We used to catch the little, you know, the little 12-inch pan fryer, like rainbows and browns, just like pan fried in butter. Mm-hmm. But I'd have to say overall was that catfish burger you made me last year.
Oh, that's so nice.
That was legit.
Yeah, that was actually one of my best work. So I was thinking, I was looking up online, some really crazy stuff, and something that some people may think of that's kind of weird, but is very, I mean, it's very high end. It would be caviar, right? Beluga caviar. That's something that's a little weird, but not what you normally think of, but that's well accepted. So I have a list of five other dishes that, for me, I don't know. I'm going to ask the end as to which one you guys would want to, you have to choose one to eat. I'm not saying you're going to have to, okay, but like if I made you eat one, you have to select one of these five to eat it, okay? So the first one is fugu. Have you guys ever heard of that one before? It's somewhat popular.
Yeah, I know what fugu is. Fugu is basically the puffer fish.
Yes.
And if you eat it, you have like a risk of dying. But they go to school for it, like years of training to learn how to cut it and stuff like that. So
yeah. So these master chefs, when they prepared the fugu, this blowfish, this puffer fish, they have to leave some of the poison in there because that's the whole excitement of eating it, is it gives you this tingly sensation. It's like you're dancing with death, but they can't leave too much in or you will die. So that's one. It's quite popular in like in Japan, in like high-end restaurants and stuff like that. It's kind of like a fun thing for tourists to do and whatnot. Now, some of these names I'm going to butcher. So if anyone speaks these languages, please, I apologize. I honestly tried to find the pronunciations of these online and I couldn't find it. So this one's from Korea, Sanakji. It's actually a live octopus. And then what they do is they cut it up real quick and they serve it to you. And if you know anything about octopi, when you cut off their tentacle, it'll keep squirming for a while after. So the whole point of this is your meal's essentially fighting you as you're trying to eat these tentacles. In fact, they're known to get stuck to your lips, teeth, and tongue while you're trying to eat these things.
Gross.
Yeah, you just eat no preparation, like just cut it up, raw, here you go, eat it. It's squirming. There's another one from Japan, Shirako. Now this one was, I've heard of some of these before. I had never heard of this one. So I'm going to describe what it looks like. It's a seasonal dish. It's served in the winter time, and it looks like a nice, like, creamy sauce. Any ideas as to what this is?
I don't even want to guess.
Cod milt.
Ew.
Which, for anyone who doesn't know what milt is the sperm. That's,
there goes our rating.
Apparently, yeah, to the top of that scoreboard. So apparently it's been described as it melts in your mouth like butter, and its flavor is comparable to pig brains.
Sounds so good.
Yeah, so far it's a contender for sure. Here's one, the lutefisk. That's from Norway. So this one is such a interesting. I want to talk to the person who invented this to be like, hey, how did you come up with this plan to prepare it this way? Apparently, Vikings used to make this too. Like, this is an old recipe. So they use dried cod. So this is cod. They dry it out. Then they soak it in water for a few days to rehydrate it. Then they place it in a lye solution. Like, lye is what they make soap with, by the way. So they place it in a lye solution until the fish meat turns to jelly. Now, if you ate it at that point, you would die because lye is poisonous. So what they do is they soak it for another week in fresh water to remove the lye. And now you can eat it.
It's like fish jello.
Yeah. Some of the descriptions for it are, it's always known to have a very strong smell, which people give it some pretty nice nicknames due to that smell. One of them is, they just call it rat poison. One of my favorite nicknames I saw for the lutefisk is fork destroyer. Oh, so that's the lutefisk from Norway. Now the fifth one I have here is from Japan again. Shiroyu no Oregu. Something like that. Again, I apologize. I'm probably terribly mispronouncing that. So this is where you eat what is known as an ice gobi. So it's served with soy sauce. So right now, that sounds not bad. Apparently, ice gobies decay rapidly once they're killed. So they have to be eaten very fresh. So the most reasonable option is eat it alive. So what they do is these little, they look like minnows. Ever had like bought live minnows for like perch fishing or like the smallest minnows you generally find at your tackle shop, bait shop?
Yeah, like pinners.
They're about that size and they're nearly transparent. And they get served in a shot glass with just a little bit of soy sauce. And you're just supposed to like drink them. No chewing. Just drink these live fish. And there's multiple. It's not like one or two. They have the shot glass like full of these little minnows like right in the top.
It's like bubble tea.
It's like way less appetizing. So apparently the last word in it's, again, I don't know how to say it, odorigu or something like that. It's translates loosely to dance eating. So essentially, as you're eating these minnows, they're dancing down your throat. It's like, I'd be dancing out to the bathroom to throw up if I tried that. That gives a, I guess, you know, we'll probably get canceled for this slogan, but, you know, like the Subway, be like, eat fresh.
Very fresh.
That's super fresh.
Very fresh.
Yeah. So if I said, you have to choose one of these to try, which one are you choosing, Arthur?
Oh, definitely fugu. Definitely.
At least it's prepared.
Yeah, at least it's prepared. And someone trained is cutting it. So yeah, I'll just go with that.
All right. How about yourself, Jesse?
So here's my thought. I feel like the fugu is kind of the cop-out answer, but you could die from it. But then you're, yes, like, you know what? At the same time, you won't die. Because like Arthur said, they're trained chefs. But just like doctors, there's always a top of the class and a bottom of the class, right? So maybe you got the guy that just barely squeaked in and wasn't very good. And then you're like, I'll take the safe option, but then you die. And you could have avoided death by eating the fish jello, fork destroyer, and just throwing up a few times. So I choose the fish jello.
The lutefisk.
I forget what it's called, yeah.
I would have to say the same. Like if I had to rank them, I don't think I could ever do like the live fish. I don't think I could ever do the cod melt.
That's gross, yeah.
If I was forced to, I could probably do one of the other three, but my choice would probably be lutefisk. I'd probably throw up still, but I'm actually really curious about that one. So if I ever have the opportunity, like, I want to try that weird fish jello.
We have to have like a average Ontario angler's fear factor episode where we just like,
that would be good.
Like,
yeah,
like hot ones kind of, but with gross fish things. See who would eat it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to mention to any of our listeners in the podcast, if you have any weird fish recipes, or on the other side, if you have any really great fish recipes that you like that maybe aren't like standard, oh, I fried it in a pan with butter and maybe some onions. That's great. But if you have any like cool recipes that either you've had or some really crazy ones, let us know in the comments on our social media. I'd love to hear some of those stories if you've tried it, especially any of the ones we talked about.
Just don't show us pictures of you throwing up afterwards. So that was awesome, Andrew. Thank you. Again, the interesting fishing fact is a cool segment because it's oftentimes a lot of our listeners will send us messages saying how much they enjoy it because it's stuff that either is gross, like Andrew usually is, you know, or it's educational, or it's just stuff that you haven't thought of before. So we try to do that every single week. So this episode, like I mentioned, it's a super really cool special episode. Every single year, this winter has been kind of weird the last, like, what, 5 years? But every single time when ice fishing starts to, you know, slow down a bit, a lot of anglers' minds turn to one thing, and that is steelhead fishing. And if you're someone like Arthur, his mind is always thinking about that because he's a steelhead guru.
I wouldn't say guru,
but... On this podcast today, I was super happy because... Again, Andrew, we were just talking a bit before we hit the record button. Andrew doesn't have a lot of experience steelhead fishing. I have some experience steelhead fishing. And Arthur, although he humbly said that he's average and mediocre, he is, in my opinion, an expert steelhead fisherman. So it's going to be a good range of us learning as well as showing some tips for you guys. So before we get started, Arthur, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself, when you started fishing, and what kind of fish you like fishing for?
Okay, wait, I'm going to stop you right there, Jesse. Before we start, listeners, I just want to tell you guys that, like, I have been a huge fan of average Ontario anglers from the get-go. Like, you don't... Okay, so everybody listen up. So these guys started their Instagram account almost the same time as I did. And I've watched them grow. I've watched them put in the work. And, like, we both can relate to how much work it goes into making content, being relevant, being entertaining, being informative, and just posting consistency. Like, I've literally watched you guys grow, and I'm a huge fan. I listen to your podcast. I watch your YouTube videos. And you say I'm a guru, but I still watch your YouTube videos. And you guys are – and the one thing that I really admire that you guys is that the fact that you're very multi-species. Me, I'm just this. I am just steelhead, salmon, that's it, and I just enjoy it. But you guys dabble in bass. You guys dabble in the perch, crappie, ice fishing, musky. Look at all those musky baits behind you. And I just want to say, like, I'm super – happy for you guys and super proud of you guys, how far you've come. Your podcast has been amazing. And you said that you were shocked that I was going to be on your podcast. Of course I would, Jesse. Of all people. Hey, listen up, listeners. I don't think you know this about Jesse, but Jesse had a tool account. And his tool account is just as successful as his fishing account. And obviously, not a lot of people know this, but I'm a general contractor. So I watched Jesse's content from the get-go as well. And yeah, I just want to let all these listeners know all the hard work that these guys do. And from one Ontario local to another, you guys are doing amazing. And I'm really happy to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I think we originally met or started following each other before. Yeah, like you said, I started a tool account and you are a general contractor. It was fun watching each other. Like, you also have another account where you post more of your work stuff. So we've been following each other for a long time. But yeah, it's definitely been a ride. And if you guys don't follow Angling Art, definitely check out his Instagram, but I'll have to warn you for one thing. If you're going to look at his Instagram, put on a pair of sunglasses because there's so much chrome. It's legit all fish pictures. And I'm just going to say right now, Arthur is one of the best, in my opinion, like fishing photographers that I've seen in Southern Ontario. Maybe not Northern Ontario, but Southern, just kidding. In all of Ontario, if you look at this guy's account, you're looking at just the most beautiful and stunning pictures of, you know, river fish and salmon, steelhead, Atlantic salmon, browns, mm-hmm. everything. It's absolutely fantastic. So we're going to link everything below in the show notes. So definitely check out his Instagram as well. And TikTok and all that other stuff. We'll put all that down there. Yeah. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Okay. I'll tell you a little about me and angling art and stuff like that. So I basically started with Instagram. I used it basically as a outlet or showcase to show my photography. Because at the end of the day, I really love photography. I love taking pictures. And then as the years went by, you know, like social media took over and reels, TikToks, blah, 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 this, blah, blah, that. And I just kept with the times. But at the end of the day, I'm just a really avid fisherman, first and foremost. And I just really like doing photography. And that was it. I literally just went from there and I just got better and better and better. And I just kept fishing and I just try to stay true to myself. I don't really have any sponsors. I don't really have to answer to anybody. And that's what I kind of like. Like, no one's really reached out to me, which I'm okay with because I can stay true to myself. I post whatever I want. I do whatever I want. And I can say whatever I want. I'm very unbiased. Like, you guys. I know Jesse. I know Jesse buys things. So he's very unbiased when it comes to what's good, what's bad, what's great, what works, what doesn't. So I'm kind of the same way, right? So I use baits and I use lures and I use reels and rods, and I get to, I don't need to promote it. It's what I like. It's what I like. So yeah, I'm Filipino Canadian. I started, I think, steelheading when I was like 9. My dad put me on this, and it just went there from there. And you know what? As much as like I hate social media, and but I love it as well, I'm really glad that in this instance where it's just like I get to meet other fellow anglers like yourselves and other people that I've met on the river and stuff like that, and we all share this one common love for fishing and for angling, no matter what species you fish for.
Definitely, yeah. And I know I don't think we've never fished together, but I have bumped into you multiple times on the creeks. Oftentimes I leave you alone because he has his cell phone against one ear. I remember seeing you down fishing this one bend down at one of the creeks. You had a cell phone wedged in your ear and you're drifting your float rod down in your float. You're looking at the float and I just gave you a wave. You didn't even see me because he was just paying attention. The guy's always down at the creek. If you don't believe me, because I know a lot of people, they'll be like, oh, this guy doesn't catch fish. Check out his Instagram. This guy catches fantastic fish. So the cool thing about this podcast is we're going to go over kind of a early spring steelheading tips. And since we did our episodes last year, me and Andrew, I thought we could have some more expert opinions on this episode, especially since we have a lot more listeners and followers this year than we did last year. So I've kind of compiled it to go through a bunch of the most popular questions that I get asked myself or that I was asked when I worked at the tackle shop. So it's kind of questions that I know people are going to be thinking and people have actually asked us on Instagram too. And then after that, we're actually going to go to some questions from listeners that were submitted by our Patreon members as well as on Instagram. So we're going to kind of start at the first point would be, I think a lot of people, and I know that I personally really didn't understand at a younger age when I got into steelhead fishing, was the spring steelhead migration. Like exactly when should you start fishing for steelhead? Because I know when I grew up, my dad was more of a trout fisherman. So I always thought when I was young, like, oh, February, like that's too cold to catch steelhead. Like when I was young, and it got to the point where it's like, I realized that that is far from the truth. So what time of year are you're raring to go when it comes to steelhead fishing?
Okay. So I'm going to break it down for you guys. So basically me now, you can literally fish for steelhead 9 months out of the year. I fish for steelhead, dropbacks, trout, whatever you want to call them, 9 months. Because then I take the summer off because I'm so much, I have to have work. And then I have, you know, you just fish so much. Like, I'm not a summer guy. I don't fish bass. I don't do any of that. So basically, this is what you want to do. These are the stages you want to do. So literally, end of August, you can kind of see some steelhead trickling in with the salmon, which is great. Because, you know, you can catch some big ones when the salmon come in. They're eating the eggs. And then as the salmon run dies down, best time, obviously, fall. You get like that's the peak of steelhead season. So you got October, November, and then you're tailing off into winter, and then you're getting into obviously winter steelheading. And like we obviously like this winter we had a mild one, right? So I was on those creeks, I was on those rivers, I was at the river mouth, bottom bouncing, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, you can get those fish that are staging or just wintering, waiting to go upstream because you know the river might be frozen. And then obviously you have February into March, which is probably the best time as well, besides fall, to go for steelhead as well, because you have all the ice melting, all the rivers opening up, you have all the snow melting, and you have just that spring run coming in to go spawn, right? And then obviously you have April, May, June, and honestly, you have April, May, which is basically nearing opener, and then April after April is opener, and then you have May, all of May, and then you and depending on water temperatures and how late the run was or how early the run was, you can even get them into June. But then when you're going into June, you're dabbling in like high temperature of the water, yeah, which is like, you know, really not good for the fish. And on top of that, it's like way too hot. Like you really don't want to be in your wade or sweating, you know what I mean? And then on top of that, it's just, they're really not that fun anymore. Like just let the fish spawn, do their thing. And then you just start the cycle all over again. So that's my life right there.
And in June, the stinging nettle is all out with full force too.
It's true. Actually, I have caught steelhead in well into June in some of those spring fed creeks when you're trout fishing. You're not expecting it. Yes. And then all of a sudden you hook into a fish and it comes out and it's like an 8-pound steelhead. And you're like, what are you doing in this creek? This creek's 7 feet wide. So <Yeah. laughs> definitely. And that's why I find a lot of guys like yourself or anglers in general, they become kind of just steelhead salmon guys because literally you can literally fish, like you said, 9 months of the year. every year and then just take the summer off if you're not into bass fishing. Not everyone likes catching bass. Like, not a big deal. I think a lot of people think that if you don't catch bass, you're a weirdo, but we think otherwise. We think if you only fish for bass, you're a weirdo. No offense. So let's kind of talk about
take
spring.
That, Roland Martin.
Yeah. He's just like, what? He's so old. Let's kind of talk about spring, because like right now we're in literally March, right? Like by the time this podcast is out, we're going to be right in the beginning of March. And I know guys have already been fishing for a few weeks, even in January during the warm parts. It's always like, it seems when there's a nice week to go out, like in January, February, I'm just slammed at work and I can't get out. That's the way it always is. And I look at people's Instagram, they're just posting. I'm like, dang it. But what kind of factors influence a push of steelhead going up the creek in the spring?
Oh, I think you have various. Well, I believe in certain things, and some other guys believe in certain things. So I look at wind, I look at water temperature, I look at melt, and I look at water levels. So you have all those different factors playing in, right? So let's say the creek is low, but the wind is just like howling at the mouth, or it could push some fish in, or if the water starts rising and it's blown, and the weather is warm, you can get them moving too. Here's another thing: if you go to the local dams. And if you go to, and there's fish there, look at them. If they're jumping, the water's really, it's a perfect temperature for them to move, right? But the water's cold, they'll just sit there. So that's why sometimes when you go to those dams, you can just literally watch the fish because they're just waiting, right? It's too cold for them to move, right? So those are some of the factors that I look at. I always look at the weather. I look at the wind, temperature, and those type of factors really that I believe in that really get fish moving.
Definitely. And I know oftentimes people that become obsessed with river fishing, for instance, they keep track of all these things. Do you do anything like that? Do you like keep track of like a, I know a lot of people keep track of like a fishing journal with like, you know.
Oh, definitely. So basically when I was a kid, when I was younger, I used to basically like have my little camera and I would take pictures of like fishing holes. I would take pictures of like the watercolor. And then as technology grew, I would screenshot like weather reports and I would screenshot the wind that day. And I literally make a little like digital journal or diary. And like if I caught that day, I would be like, okay, I got to replicate this. What if I can replicate this on that same day? I'll be like, okay, that's a great day to go fishing. Well, obviously, you go have work and stuff like that. So you're just there crying, yeah. Hoping that you can go fish.
For guys like me, it's like if I have a day off, I have to fish even if it sucks. So
Yes. Hey, you know what, man? You never know. I've had days like that when I used to work a 9-to-5 and I'm like, you know what? Like, I have to fish this. I have to. Even if it sucked, if it was rainy, it was cold, it was windy, the water was blown, I was just like, let's just go. And I think a lot of people lose that where it's just, they just want to go on the best days. When I'm like, if this is your only day, just go, man. Just go. Like, they lose the essence of fishing. And sometimes I feel like if you don't catch, you don't catch. Cares, right?
Sometimes too, those best days is when the creeks are going to be most crowded, so these fish are at their most pressured. Whereas if you go on a crappy day and other guys aren't around, these fish, okay, they may have relaxed a bit. It might not be their ideal weather themselves, but they might be in a more relaxed state and less spooked because no one has been fishing for them all day because it's been, you know, hailing.
So wear your hard hat.
Honestly. That is a great, yeah, no, that's perfect. Like, I do believe in fishing pressure. Totally. Yeah,
100%. Especially the creeks we fish. In Ontario, for instance, this is an Ontario fishing podcast, but if you're listening and you're not from Ontario, a lot of people do listen from different parts of the world and from the States. The GTA or the Greater Toronto Area has over 10 million people in it. And there are a bunch of creeks flowing out of Lake Ontario. And on the weekend, those creeks are absolutely slammed. Like, it used to be like, you know, we're probably similar in age, Arthur. Back when we were young, you'd fish the creeks. It was totally different than it was in the last 5 years. Like, we used to fish a creek that was kind of like one of those secret little creeks. And you go there, there'd be one or two guys there. And now you go there during the week, you know, during the week, 5 a.m. in the morning, and there's 13, 14 cars lined up. So like, fishing pressure, we're going to get more into that in the technique section, but fishing pressure is a huge deal, in my opinion, as well. So, and it's not just me complaining that the fish are hard to catch. I think it's actually a thing.
No, you're totally right, Jesse. Like before, me and you, when back in the day, you could go on a Monday, there'd be zero people. And now on a Monday, there's maybe like, Monday's the new Saturday. Mondays are the new weekend. Yeah.
Jesse's also the type of guy, though, to yell at kids on his front lawn. So
Get on air. I'm not one of those steelhead guys that thinks that I own the creek, though. There's a bunch of those out there. We're going to kind of talk a little bit about key locations to find these steelhead. So you mentioned kind of like, okay, if the wind's pushing a certain way or if there's some melt or different situations. Say you're just getting into steelhead fishing or you don't have a lot of experience doing it, as many people do. Where are you going to start looking early, like I'm saying, like late winter, kind of early spring, just after the ice is kind of melting? Where are you going to look? Like, where's your first place you should look for steelhead?
All right, so I'm just trying to break it down for our listeners so they understand like how I would dissect a river, and for beginners as well. So there's like, I think, four or five parts of a river that you want to target. First of all, you have the mouth. You have the mouth of any river, whether it be like a pier area or just an opening, like a beach. So you can either bottom bounce on the lake or you can fish that mouth. So that's number one. And then as you work up your way up your river, up the river, you have the estuaries, which is basically like the wider part of the bottom of the river. And I like to fish those because that's where basically they hold before they go up river. So that's the second part. So then as you work your way up, you have the main sections of the river. And that's where I would, as a beginner angler, I would target those areas just because like it really narrows, you know, the term shooting fish in a barrel. It really narrows their chances. I mean, really narrows the fish and helps them, you know, catch fish, because it's really hard to catch fish on the lake. It's really hard to fish the wider the river. And then obviously after opener, you have headwaters. So that's another section of the river that obviously those are fish are either spawning or done spawning and they're dropping back. So as the ice is basically coming out and winter's tailing off and we're headed into spring, these fish are staging. So they're staging out the mouth, waiting for either rain or warm temperatures to make their way up. So I would highly suggest, like at this time of the year, the river mouths, piers, estuaries, and as the river as the river's coming down, obviously upriver is a great time too. So those are like the three places that I would target, especially if I was a novice or a new angler. Like I barely go upriver anymore, just because like A, crowds and B, it's too skinny for me now. But again, I'm not knocking that. That's where I started. I started all the way up there, this and that, and like again. Like you can only have so many people and so many holes. Like I'm not going to, if I see five guys fishing one hole, I'm not going to go and harass them and add another body. Right. So I'd rather just fish the mouth, maybe catch one or two rather than getting higher chances of catching more fish upriver. So that's for a new angler. That's how I would dissect where I would fish and how I would fish.
I agree with that too. In my experience anyway, the fish, I think the word you were looking for was condensed. The fish are more in a condensed area, which is exactly that's like
weird, yes.
In when you're fishing, like I always just call it the frog water, like the, you know, the slow, wide area, the river right above the lake, the frog water, it's slow, it's deep. There's not a lot of like actual structure. Sometimes it's not like you're looking for like pools or bends because there's usually none of that. It's just slow, kind of muddy looking water. I think for a beginner, that takes more skill to catch fish down there than it does up river, because your bait is, it's slower, it's in their face. There's more time for the fish to actually examine the bait. But when you're fishing up river, the fish are kind of more condensed in bends and in pools, and your bait's generally moving a little faster past them. So they kind of just react and grab it. So I'd say that if you're just starting out, that's definitely a great tip for finding more fish in a condensed area. And just to add to the point where you said you'd rather fish down where there's less people and catch one or two fish, I think that's just the thing about getting older. So when I was young, I would have no problem fishing up in the creeks and have all these people around. But now that I'm like, after I pass my 30s, I'm 33 now, and I'm just like, every year, I just want to be around less and less people. And it's not like I don't like fishing with people. Like I love fish. Like if we all went fishing, that'd be great. But if I don't know people, and I know people are like, well, make friends. It's not like that. Sometimes you just want to enjoy fishing for the solitude and the relaxation. And I'm the same way. I'd rather just go somewhere where I might catch one than kind of like shoulder to shoulder hitting each other's rod tips. Like sometimes it gets super crazy. Like me and Andrew have gone down the creek and it's just like you're fishing and then people just barge in on you, fish like on one side of each of you. And you're just like, dude, this is a small pool, right? But there's no etiquette anymore, unfortunately. That's a good tips. And then kind of like you mentioned, after opener, you can fish all those headwaters. I don't know, like I don't examine your photos with a microscope like some people probably do, but do you ever fish like a lot of the like super high headwaters?
No, not really, man.
No.
Like the way me and my friends always talk about it, and maybe you guys can agree and my listeners can agree, but opener is really closer.
Yes.
Because if you think of steelheading is starting all the way like early August and stuff like that, and the best times are fall and like I said to you before, early ice out, and that's where you get quality fish and you get quantity. And then as opener comes, opener is just like, they're all dropped back. They're tired. They just want to, you know, just do their thing and leave.
Yeah.
So I see opener as like a time to just hang out with friends and get out, but I don't treat it as serious as I do as the rest of the year. So
definitely. Yeah. Cause then it really, really peters off. Like I know like catching drop backs can be fun, especially like if you're like chucking stream, like fly fishing with streamers, or if you're chucking crankbaits or spinners and stuff, it can be really like a lot of fun. But when you're fishing some of these like high headwaters that are like, you're talking like some of these creeks are only 10 feet wide and full of logs and branches and stuff. Half the fish you hook anyway, you lose. It's like you hook a 10 pound steelhead on even like 8 pound line and it goes absolutely nuts under a log jam. You're not getting that fish out. Like I've lost so many steelhead when I've been trout fishing just with a little MEP spinner, and this steelhead comes out of nowhere, grabs it and just zzzz straight downstream and snaps me off. You know, it's not fun. Andrew can tell you, he's an expert at that. Andrew's a story, actually. Why don't you tell the Jumper Creek story quick?
Yeah, so, tell me that. I want to hear.
So it's not, we call it Jumper Creek to disclose its a secret identity, but or to hide it. But we fish this creek like for even just stream trout in the summer and whatnot. So we were up here and we learned some dropbacks. We see a couple of these big steelhead. And it was one of my first steelhead. I think that was my first steelhead, actually.
I think that was your first
that
one.
That I landed, yeah. So we're fishing there and I had this big juicy dew worm just hanging back behind like this little worm hook. And it's just sitting there. And I, the way I'm standing in this pool, I can't see the fish because there's this huge like 3 foot around, like across tree that's growing up out of over top of this pool. So I'm kind of hiding behind it so I don't spook these fish. And I have Jesse on the other side of the creek telling me, you know, oh, let out more line, like bring it up, you know, bring it up higher, bring it down. And then I'm just waiting for Jesse to tell me when it has it in his mouth, because I expect the thing just to come up and just softly grab it. And it's exactly what this thing did. So Jesse's like, set the hook. So I set the hook and I'm fighting this thing on my like medium action little trout rod. And I had, I think, what, 10-pound test mono. It's my old bass combo. That's all I was using. And so this steelhead just starts somersaulting like 3 times, like out of the air. Just on our drop back, this thing had impressive stamina. So it starts somersaulting, and on the side, on the other side of this creek, there's a couple log jams that come across in the shallow bay, and it proceeds to jump over top of the logs, do a loop, a U-turn in the shallow bay, and then swim down underneath the logs back into the creek. Now it's on that side of the creek, I could see it. So Jesse's like, that's it, you're done. Like, that, there's no way you're getting that out. And so I started just applying pressure. I got the steelhead to turn back towards those logs. And as soon as his head went under it, I just heaved as hard as I dared on that rod to bring his head up. He jumped right back over that log. And then I was trying to land the thing. It started running down to the bottom of the pool was just this just tangle of cedar trees. So Jesse's down there at the bottom of the pool, splashing around, scaring this thing back up so it doesn't run into this pile of sticks. And
that's
eventually,
smart.
Yeah, eventually we get this thing landed, and it's a dark, like olive green rainbow trout, but it was like the colors were saturated. I'll say that, but it was still like a healthy fish.
So your biggest steelhead?
That's still my biggest steelhead. Yeah, nice. Yeah.
It was a pretty decent fish, and it was just funny because it was like a miracle. His line was like getting sheared on this log and I'm like, you're doomed. And then he just pulled it and it happened to jump and he kind of like pulled it as it jumped and it came over the log. I was like, what? He should have bought a lottery ticket that day. He didn't. So yeah, I don't do a lot of steelhead fishing up in the streams. We did a lot of stream trout fishing over the years. I've kind of got out of that a lot because a lot of the places we used to fish, they're all private property now, unfortunately. So we've kind of, since we got boats now, we kind of graduated to like after trout opener, it's kind of more like, okay, it's pike season, it's walleye season, it's muskie season. Like it goes through that progression for us. But we'll have another episode about fishing for stream trout probably in May. So the second part I'd like to talk to Art about is gear. Now I'm a big gear junkie. I'm not a big steelhead fishing gear junkie. I don't have, you've got a lot of nice reels. I'll tell you what I have right now. I have one Islander, which I bought before they got crazy expensive.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Inflation's real. Well, inflation's real.
I'll tell you, I bought the black Islander. I wanted the green one because that's my favorite color. And as soon as I saved up my money, all the green ones, like you couldn't find them anywhere. I couldn't find one. So I ended up settling for the black one. And I got the one with the upgraded like ABEC 7 bearings and all that stuff. And it was $4.99 when I got it brand new.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm glad I bought it though, because that's the kind of reel that will last you your whole life if you take care of it. But that's, I have a an Islander, that one. And then I have also a more budget priced Okuma Raw, which is one I picked up on Kijiji for literally $40 a few years ago, or maybe 10 years ago by now. But I have a bunch of steelhead rods, but I'm more interested to hear about some of the cool reels in your collection. So for this, this would be more for the bougie segment of this podcast for people that actually steelhead fish. Tell us about some of your coolest center pin reels you have.
My collection's downsized a lot. Like, I used to be really addicted to center pins, and I used to buy a lot, and I had a lot of friends who wanted to sell me. I have a lot of friends who are like older, like my uncle. He really put me onto center pin fishing, and he has his friends, and they've been doing it for years before I was even born. So they have a lot of reels, and they would pass it down to me, or they would sell it to me, and then I'd have them. Like, so you have like all the great names. You have like Kleps, you have Angling Specialties, you have Canada Reels, you have John Milner's, you have Kingpins, you have all that stuff. But you know what, Jesse, and I know you can do this, but at the end of the day, man, like, it's just a hub and a shaft.
They all spin.
Yeah, they all spin. So I know people can get caught up on the hype train of like, oh, I got the most expensive this and the custom that. At the end of the day, like, I sold a lot of mine away. Because I thought this was useless. Like, they're collecting dust. I spent so much money on these things. And if you're a collector, don't get me wrong, all the power to you. But I don't understand what the point of having it is, all those center pins, when really, I honestly just fish like three center pins. I have like my steelheading one. I have one for like bigger water. And then I have my salmon one, which is also an Islander. So it just goes to show like those things are bombproof and well worth their money. And yeah, I don't really have much to say about it because, like, as Jesse, and you know, like, when you get older, like, it's just, I have them because I just enjoy them. I don't treat them. I don't baby them. As you can see in my pictures, like, I lay them on the ground. All my reels have rock rash. If you spin them, you can hear all the sand inside of them. Like,
yeah,
I treat them as tools and the tools that do me right. But you want to invest in those tools, right? So I didn't really cheap out on them. Like, one of my best reels is my Milner. It's like bomb proof. Islander, top notch for the price. And my other one is a one of my uncle's friends makes center pins, so he made one, and all my cousins and my friends, we all just got them. So we have like a little club, and we all have like 12. We have 12 center pins, all matching. And yeah, at the end of the day, man, like, you're right. It spins. It's just a hub and a shaft. So I can't justify spending thousands of dollars on. Like, I'd rather buy a Panoptics. I rather buy something that like really does something for me. Don't get me wrong, there are certain center pins that are built like there's ones with drag, there's ones with very high tolerances, and there's ones that are super valuable. And like, it just all goes to if there's a market for it, right? Like, and back to what you were saying, Jesse, about the whole like buying the Islander and reels. I'm really glad that me and you bought those reels like back when we did, because the prices are crazy right now. Like, I saw an Islander for like $700. When going price back in the day was like $300. I have a gold one, and a used gold one was the standard, and it was like $300 used.
Yep. Yeah. I remember when I did the fishing store back when I was still a teenager, Islanders were, I think they were like $399 or something brand new. And now you're looking at like $800. And that's in a period of like, you know, 12, 15 years. Yeah, it's gotten crazy. My advice, if anyone's listening and they're looking to buy their first center pin, we're going to talk a little bit about spinning reels coming up real soon. Buy the best one you can afford. That's what I'd always tell people. Buy the best one you can afford. And if that means using a spinning reel for one extra year and just saving your pennies, do it. Because I've had so many people when I worked at the tackle shop, they'd buy those cheap Chinese made stamped metal ones. Yeah, they work great. You can catch fish on them, no problem. But they're not going to last you years and years and generations. Like, you buy an Islander or a Milner, you're going to pass that down to your grandkids and it'll still work perfectly fine. You buy these cheap pressed ones that aren't even like machined, they will break, they won't last. You're not going to be happy with them. You're going to like regret buying it in 2 years when you want to upgrade anyway. So my advice would be save your pennies. I know it's expensive. Pick up some side jobs, like do something, wait an extra year if you have to, just buy a good quality reel and then just keep that thing and baby it forever. Or not baby it, but like take care of it and it'll last forever. That would be my opinion on that. I'm still trying to get Andrew to buy one. He always borrows mine when we go out.
Well, back to what you were saying with the whole thing. Like, I think also my best advice for all the listeners out there, my best advice for you is to buy used. Buy used.
Yes.
You know why I say that? Because if someone like me is going to buy, not me, don't use me as an example. I treat my stuff like, you know what I mean? But buy something from some used, because if that person, like, for example, you buy something off Jesse, Jesse's going to take care of that $600 reel. He's not going to destroy it, put rock rash, put dirt in it. So you know that when you buy it from him, he's like, oh, well, this person bought it for $800. They're not going to treat it like trash. So, and then obviously you can get it as a discount. Maybe he'll sell it for $650 or $700 again. And it goes for rods. And it, I honestly buy a lot of stuff used, and I bought all my reels used. I don't think the only thing I bought new when it came to my fishing gear or my stuff was like the custom reel that I bought from my oldest friend. Like, that's it. And even then, yeah, it was cheap. It was like $350. But other than that, yeah, waders. If you could get your waders for used, or your boots, all this stuff. Like, these guys spend thousands of dollars on their gear. They're going to take care of it. I know waders get worn and stuff like that, but when it comes to rods, especially rods and reels, man, rods are going for thousands of dollars, and so do center pins. Are like, minimum I've seen is like $750. So not a lot of people have that type of money around, right? So anywhere you can save money, buy. That's, I always tell people, Facebook Marketplace, Kijiji. For our American listeners, Craigslist. I'm sure there's other. Go on Facebook. I'm sure they have float fishing forums and centerpin forums, and you can buy and resell that type of gear. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, one of the best tips, then, if you're buying used from these guys, tell them you need. You're going to meet them to exchange and purchase it at their favorite fishing spot, and that way you not only get the rod or the reel, but you also get the 4-in-1 right in their honey hole.
Believe me, they won't fall for that. I tried.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said that I take care of my reel, but unfortunately it has a lot of chips in it and a bunch of skein gross film on it. I haven't cleaned off since salmon season, but yeah. So anyway, we're going to talk quickly about spinning reels. So I remember growing up, again, I think we're about the same age-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, center pins were, they were definitely popular when I was younger, but I feel like the last like 15 years they've really picked up steam, because like back in the day when I was fishing, we used to use noodle rods. Remember those? Like, you'd have a spinning reel and a noodle rod, which was like a 10.5 or 11 foot ultralight, and it was rated for like 2 to 4 pound line. Like, that was normal to see guys fishing a noodle rod, which I still have my noodle rod. I actually took it sucker fishing with Andrew a few years ago. 2 pound sucker loads that thing right down to the cork. It's absolutely like terrible. Like, I don't know how we fish steelhead with that crap all those years. But if someone was looking to get into centerpin fishing, and like you said, centerpin reels are not cheap. If they want to get into it and just buy a spinning reel and put it on a float rod, is that something you'd recommend or what?
Totally. Totally. So I think the only disadvantage you have is upriver or where there's fast current. Because when you're in a sequence of guys, so let's say me, you, Andrew, and we're all in a sequence, and then you have my dad up top. So all of us are float fishing and we're like drifting really far. And we're all, and then when the last person takes in their line, that's the key for everyone to take up their line, and we all cast again. But when you're using a spinning reel, you can't have that. Yeah, and if you do, you open your bail and you let it drift like we do. But let's say your bobber goes down, you have to close your bail, start reeling in all that slack, and then set the hook. And in all that time that you're doing that, the fish is probably let go, or you set the hook and you miss the set. So you have disadvantages and advantages with. So with the spinning reel, my dad is getting a lot older. For the listeners, my dad is like a real inspiration to me. We fish a lot. And as he's getting older, as most of us realize, like, you really get affected by the cold. So holding a center pin is really hard in the winter because it's made out of metal, right? So I always let him set up. I set him up with a spinning reel. And we fish a lot of frog water. We fish the mouth. And you just chuck it out there and hope for the best. You know what I mean? So there's an advantage there too, where when you're river fishing and your hands are cold and you want to put gloves on. And then you could just use a spinning reel, right? The drift is not moving very much. So you have no problem with that. When you're twitching flies or jigs, it's the same thing. So there's advantages and disadvantages. With the spinning reel, you can just flick of the wrist and you're casting that as far as you can. When with center pinning, you know, if you don't really know how to cast, you really got to like put your whole body into it and stuff like that. So there's advantages and disadvantages. But the whole reason why center pinning is so effective is just so you can match the drift, right? And make your bait as natural as possible in the water. And that's why some people don't want to believe it, but that's why center pin is obviously an effective way of catching steelheads, browns, salmons, and stuff like that. So to answer your question, yeah, I really do. If you can't afford a center pin right now, float fishing with a spinning reel is totally okay. Because honestly, I did it for years before I could afford a center pin. And I did great. Even though that was like the 90s when like fishing was like good.
It was good back then. The good old days.
The good old days.
I did it for years too. I remember I had a noodle rod and then I eventually got a 11.5 foot Fenwick HMX, the old ones. And I had just a spinning rod, like a Shimano 2500 just taped onto the cork. And I used that for years until I got my first center pin. But it is true. Center pins, definitely you have a slight advantage in presentation in areas with current anyway. So we're going to have to kind of move on quick. This podcast will probably be longer than normal, but I'm totally fine with that because this is good. So these are questions I get all the time. So we're going to kind of stick to center pin because this we're talking about steelhead fishing. But I get a lot of people ask me this question every single year is what line do you run on your center pin, like as a main line? The line that I personally run, I've been using Suffix Siege or Suffix Advantage for years. I use like either 10 or 12 myself.
So for me, honestly, I used to be a Suffix Siege type of guy. I think my dad has it on his spinning reel and his center pin. So that's a great brand. I use I use P-Line. P-Line I use for my center pin. I think I use 8 or 10. And then for salmon, I use like 12 or 15. So I really like mono. P-Line's really strong. The diameter is strong. Abrasion's good. And I really don't have a problem with it. And I got a big spool on sale for like $50. So I just spool everything with that. And I always try to, when it comes to line, I always try to change it up every year because, you know, you get abrasion, you get stretch, you get tangle. I mean, you get memory when you're casting and stuff like that. So yeah, that's what I use and I'm really confident with it. And at the end of the day, everything that I'm telling you guys and listeners out at home, you have to, no matter what brand you use, like, I think you have to have confidence in everything you use. You're going to go through lines and you're going to be like, I hate this, I love this. But at the end of the day, it's what you feel most comfortable with. Like, for example, like center pins, too light, too heavy, rods, same thing. Too light, too heavy. It, not everyone is going to like what you like. Like, it's like Cinderella. The shoe's not going to fit everybody. It's only going to fit for you. So what about you, Andrew? What kind of line do you like?
I generally go for the blue Stren from about 40 years ago. I've never seen that set.
Like... I don't even know what that is.
And to add to that, what color? I get asked this a lot too, because I went through a phase where I would use clear, and then I would use green, and and some guys like to use, you know, fluorescent orange, fluorescent yellow. I don't personally like the fluorescent lines myself. I don't think it actually makes that big of a difference. Just a confidence thing, like you said. I generally run green line, like the low visibility green. What are your thoughts on that, quick?
Yeah, like I said, so I run the moss green, so same thing. And my dad runs the clear one when it comes to Siege. So again, what I said, like I said to you before, I fish a lot with like the old guys, the veterans and stuff like that, and they all run high vis. And I'm like, why do you guys like riding high vis? Is it because they can't see?
Yeah, it's true.
And honestly, man, it gets you, man. That's one thing that no one can beat, Father Time, right? So it helps them when they're tying their knots, and it helps them where their line is going, when they can bend it and stuff like that. So honestly, at the end of the day, it's preference. Because hear me out. So I used to run colored line as well. And then I got so paranoid and it got in my head where it's just like, so here's my float. And then you got this orange line coming down and then a swivel and then my fluoro. And then I'm like, yo, they can see that. How come I'm not getting bit? And then my friends are catching and I'm like, it's got to be the line. So maybe it wasn't the line. Maybe it was just I had a bad bait or whatever. But it was in my head. So I'm like, okay, as soon as I got home, I stripped it all off. I threw it in the garbage and I just put mono on, whether it be Siege or P-Line. And yeah, I never went back.
If fly fishing can be successful with some giant floating bright green line and then 6 feet away you have your presentation, and they still go for that, then, you know, main line for me, again, it's like you say, it's your confidence. If your confidence is going to be using a certain line, that's what you need to go with. Absolutely, because that's going to be confidence in the water makes it or breaks it. But at the same time, if you don't see a need with it, from my personal opinion, the fish isn't looking at the main line, it's looking at my leader. And I can put on a long leader, and I'm fine. Doesn't matter what you know, he's forgotten what he saw 8-10 foot upstream. He's looking at this bead coming across now.
We're going to get right into leaders. That's actually good, Andrew, for bringing that up, because I feel like using colored line might be, you know, a bad thing if you're only using like a 1 foot leader and your fish is seeing all this line. But getting into using, so everyone's like, okay, you're using 10 or 12 pound line on your float reel, but you are attaching a leader onto that line. So again, we're going super over time on this. So let's try to just keep this fairly brief. It's not going to happen, but we'll try. When it comes to leaders, like, and I know it's going to depend where you fish. Like if you're fishing the Niagara, you're not fishing the same type of leaders that you are in literally, you know, Bonneville Creek.
Well, that's my favorite spot. What are you doing?
Spot burn. Anyway, all the creeks. If you can't find steelhead creeks by typing into Google where to fish steelhead in Ontario, those creeks are going to pop up anyway. But anyway.
Does it feed into Lake Ontario? There's steelhead in it.
In general, if you're fishing in Ontario for steelhead, generally speaking, if you're a beginner or someone just getting a steelhead, what leader diameters or pound should someone have? Like if they can only have maybe three or four, like what would you recommend for that?
Okay. Remember when you said this wouldn't go over an hour? It's hard to trust me. This is going to go over an hour.
No, it already is.
So when it comes to leader, wait, before I start with, talk about that, I'm not going to go into it, but for those listeners, you can also use braid as your main line. I've never done it, but I know a lot of guys do it. The reason why you want to use braid, or you can try braid, because braid floats on top of the water. And when you're drifting, it's perfect. And what is braid good for? No stretch. So when you set that hook, you're really burying it in them, right? So I'll leave that information with you, and then we can talk about it another time. But when it comes to leader, I'm older now, I'm more biased. But when I was younger, I used to dabble in, like, you know, 3 pound, 4 pound, 5 pound, stuff like that. Because, like, I would fish the creeks, and then those creeks would get ultra gin, and, like, fish would see it and stuff. They get spooked. Remember, those fish are getting harassed every day. So let's say Andrew goes one day, same hole, and then Jesse goes the same hole the next day, and then I go the third day. So, you know what I mean? That's why you got to go stealth and then have a chance of catching them, right? And I've seen guys do that. But as I've gotten older, I'm like, you know what, man? Like, if the creeks are gin, I'm not going to be fishing it anymore. I'd rather have that, like, dirty-ish water, that slaughter water, or just, like, coming down. So I'll go nothing less than 6 pounds when it comes to leader. And then when on dirtier days, I'll go 8 or even 10, just so I could just, like, not worry and just horse them in, unhook them, and throw them back. So that's just my mentality now. And, and on top of that, man, you lose less gear. I'm, like, pulling tree limbs out of the water. I pulled a bike out one time. At the creek that you guys fish at, I pulled a bike out one time.
It does not surprise me.
Were you using Drennan?
No, I was using FC.
That's awesome, yeah. And I'd say, too, like you said, your certain pound range, and I know a lot of people, like, again, you could have a whole podcast on, you know, choosing what kind of fluorocarbon leaders for steelhead, and a lot of people would be like, oh, I like this brand because it's stronger, but you're like, it's stronger because the diameter's thicker, so, like, it's actually yes. 2 or 4 pound test stronger. So, like, yes. Drennan, for example, has always been my favorite, but Drennan, it runs really thick, right? You know, yes. Everyone knows that. So you buy 3 pound test Drennan, and it's literally, like, 5 or 6 pound thick, right? So you really yes. have to experiment with that. So for me, anyway, what I have on my leader material, it's Drennan, but I have 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. And it's all, like, it's not 3, it's actually like 5, 5.5. Yeah. So, you know, if the water's gin clear, I'll use that 3 pound, but it's not 3, it's like 5, 5.5. And then, yeah, if I can get away with it, I don't see why people try to use light line if they don't need to. Like, you should always use the heaviest line you can get away with, because, like you yes. said, when you have a fish on, especially a nice fish, I don't want to be stressing that it's going to snap me off just by turning its head. And some guys are out there using legitimate 3 pound line when they don't need to. It's like, especially if you're, like, drift fishing a bead really fast, they don't have time to, like, look at your line. They're just grabbing it. It's a reaction, right? So why not use 6 pound? Like, again, you could have a whole podcast about, like, you know, the water resistance on braid and it not being natural. But generally, if you have 6 pound, you're good. And if you can get away with it, like Art said, 8 pound or 10 pound. But I think the older you get, the more you mature and realize that it's better for the fish to get that fish in quick and get it back in the water instead of fighting it to death, which we see a lot in the fall for salmon, guys just using gear that's way too yeah. thin. But that's another podcast entirely. We'll have to have you on in the fall again. So we're going to go quick to bait and lure selection very briefly on this.
Okay.
If you could have, I'm going to narrow it down. If you could have 3 presentations, like 3 okay. things that you're going to bring, and that's the only thing you're allowed to use year round, what would it be?
Oh, row bag. 1, row bag. 2, a jig. And 3, a bead. That's it. That's literally all you need, to be honest with you. Just a variation. So here, 3 colors, peach, chartreuse, and some yep. sort of shade of white. When it comes to flies or jigs, anything black or brown. And then when it comes to row bags, chartreuse, white, peach, yellow. Either could be salmon roe, steelhead roe, or brown roe. That's literally what you could just see. If I were to just narrow down for a beginner, right there. And that's literally what I use. I only start dabbling in things because, like, my friends catch on this stupid color. And I'm like, man, do I really got to use that? Do I really got to use that? So, again, but at the end of the day, that's why we try that. Like, look at Jesse. Look at all those baits behind you, Jesse. The reason why you buy that is because you want to try it, right? When it comes to, you want to get a staple, I call it arsenal. You want to have a certain arsenal of baits that you're like your go-to baits. Like chartreuse would be a go-to bait. A peach would be a go-to bait. So that's two beads. A black jig or a black fly, that's another go-to item for me. And then roe bag, whether it be a trout roe bag, a brown trout roe bag, or a salmon roe bag. Like those are literally staple. Like those five, you could catch so many fish with that. So many fish with that. You just have to know when to use it and how to use it and the water conditions and where you are and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like as fishermen, we make things complicated.
I actually have a hopefully be a quick question, but if you could think of a couple words of advice for or rules of thumb, if you want, mainly about etiquette. Or just something that you wish you knew when you were starting out is, you know, I wish I had either like this always with me, you know, an item. What would be a couple tips that you would give to someone starting out in steelheading right now?
First of all, you gotta, I know there's like social media and there's like Google Maps and then there's a YouTube and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I think the most fundamental thing that new people need to realize is just go fishing. Go fishing. It's just like Jesse's in the trades, you're in the trades, I'm in the trades. What's the best way to learn? In the field. So you can always learn from these podcasts and from YouTube and stuff like that. The best way to become a great angler and just to learn and have fun is just to go fishing. Just go fishing, dude. Like you get skunked, you catch one, you lose one. It's the best way to learn. It's the best way to learn. You can only learn so much online. And that's why I'm kind of glad I fished back in the day. Or it's just like I kind of had to like all three of us. I'm pretty sure we're kind of the same age. We're like the same age as like the internet. So we grew up as the internet grew up. So we just learned the hard way. Like, dude, like I didn't have flow charts. I didn't have YouTube. I didn't have any of this. Like I had to go fishing, get skunked multiple times before. Now I can go out. I can pick a river, and I kind of know. Oh, I just look at the weather, look at the flow charts, look at the conditions and stuff like that, and I can like, okay, well, I think I could get one. I think I can get one out of here. And if I get more, that's great. But if I don't, it was a learning experience. And yeah. And then another piece of advice, just continuously learn. Jesse said I was a guru. Trust you, man. Like if you fished with the guys I fished, these guys who are like 80 years old, say 70 years old, they've seen some stuff, man. The stories they've told me, like me and you got the tail end of the good days. Those guys you could throw a cigarette butt and you could catch fish back in those days, man. Yeah.
No, it's true. And you know what, though, as much as that is cool, I try not to compare our current situation in fishing with what it was in the, you know, the 80s. I hate when people are like, oh, man, back in the day, I used to catch, you know, 15, 20 day minimum. It's like, yeah, back when it was easy. Like we all have pictures of our dad holding up full stringers of like 5 pound bass. It's like you could literally chuck a popper all day and catch a 25 pound limit at that local lake. Right. So times have changed and anglers have adapted. Like back in the day, no one's fishing a lot of the techniques and baits that we're fishing now. Although steelhead fishing is pretty similar. There hasn't been a lot of huge changes, but even like a bead, like my dad grew up trout fishing and I showed him, I was like, oh man, I caught, you know, three the other day. It was a great day. What would you catch him on? Worms? I was like, no, a bead. And he didn't know what a bead was. He was like, what? He's like, they hit that? And I was like, yeah, I was explaining to him how it worked and it just blew his mind. Like, again, he's not a steelhead guy, but it just stuff like that. Things evolve, techniques and stuff to be more efficient in fish water. I just wanted to add one point going before Andrew's question about you said you have to learn how to use certain baits in a certain situations. So kind of to elaborate on that, for instance, you said you had a fly, a bead and a roe bag. So if you're fishing like muddy frog water with like no current, you know, hanging a bead out there is not the best job because the fish, A, it's not going to be able to smell it because it doesn't smell like anything. It's not going to be able to see it probably because it's just sitting there. And it doesn't really look natural. Like you don't just see a salmon egg just floating like, you know, 2 feet above the bottom, like in just still water. So like a roe bag would be a better option because, you know, it has all that scent coming from it. It's bigger, it's brighter. So you really have to, you know, use some common sense too. Steelhead aren't smart, but they're not dumb. So like use some common sense in figuring out what the best way to catch them would be. I think a lot of people, they have this like weird thing in their head where they think steelhead are like the smartest genius fish of all time. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I can't catch them. They're way too smart or they're way too finicky. But generally speaking, if you do your research and you put in the time, you can generally catch them if you find them. In my experience anyway. I'm not saying you're going to catch like 20 a day, but they're not that smart. They're pretty dumb actually sometimes. Art's like, you're totally dumb. So I know we could have a whole podcast just about talking about like individual parts of this podcast, like baits, you know, fishing flies or drift fishing or fishing spinners and stuff like that. But I feel like what we talked about today, it really just was like a good overall, you know, talk about steelhead fishing in Ontario, which is something that I love. And hopefully I'm going to force Andrew to get into it this year, which is like right now, Andrew, like, come on.
We'll get out, Jesse. Absolutely.
The problem is when I take Andrew out, he uses my gear and then I'm afraid he's going to snap my rod. So it's kind of stressful for me.
How do you think I feel when I take you on my boat? I'm just kidding. That's a piece
of
junk.
Your boat costs $200. I'll buy you a new one.
That's good.
I thought the last point we could kind of cover is kind of in the advice section that Andrew brought up. For steelhead fishing, in your opinion, what is the importance of patience, persistence, and adaptability?
Oh, dude, it's like number one. Number one, you got to have confidence. Like, I've had days where I don't catch nothing, and like I tell myself, like, I have to will a fish out. And if you just have that little bit of confidence, it makes a whole, like, the whole experience that much better. When it comes to like just giving you advice or giving the new generation advice, I think people take fishing way too seriously. I'm like, you're supposed to have fun, man. Like, when me and my friends are out, we have a lot of fun. We catch fish, sure. That's why I take photos. Like, I try to capture the moment so I can look back at it. Cause like when I'm 60, I'm not going to be able to do the stuff that I'm doing now, right? Like going up cliffs, going up rocks, doing Niagara, wading in water that's like freezing. You know what I mean? So my best advice for the next generation is just like, just enjoy it. Don't take it too seriously. Fish because you want to fish. Like, fish not because like you want to catch like 1,000 fish. Enjoy the outdoors. I'm like, that's the whole reason why all of us are so passionate about fishing. It's because we get time away from work, time away from like just our stresses, our problems and stuff like that. Like, and also I think this is my number one. All of you can agree. I think is like continuously be a sponge. And what I mean by that is like, just absorb information. So the stuff that I've been saying and all of us, Jesse and Andrew, have been saying on this podcast, like an older guy would be like, I know all of that. I know I could catch 1,000 fish, blah, 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 this. I'm like, okay, fine. That's great. You're going to stay in the Stone Age, old man. But when you have a younger guy and he's like, whoa, I didn't know that. I didn't know you could fish steelhead in the winter. I didn't know you could fish them at ice out and stuff like that. So continuously absorb. Like, even now, I'm still learning, man. Like, there's young guys that are showing me baits. And showing me ways of fishing and stuff like that. I'm like, that's cool, man. Like, do you catch on that? And they're like, yeah. They're like, okay, well, where can I get that? You know what I mean? Or like, what kind of line do you use? Like, people, like, it's just, you continuously want to learn to be a better angler. Because if you stop, then that's where you are. You plateau. You just go like this. But as an angler, you want to keep going like this. Just like my Instagram account and just like this podcast, you guys started down here and you guys are just on a trajectory to be. You guys are going to be the next beat Joe Rogan. You guys are going to beat Weed Eater. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be like, I was on that podcast.
Yeah.
So
I just want to say something with you. You mentioned that some of the older guys, and they might be kind of stuck or saying like, hey, they don't want to divulge their information or even they say like, oh, I know everything there needs to know. But like you said, things are changing. You can't fish like you did years ago. For anyone who's starting out, and that's our big thing that we like to do with this podcast, is average anglers, people who aren't experts, who haven't been doing it for decades. Or if you have, maybe you'll learn a couple tricks if you keep your mind open. But like you said, keep learning. But for those who are looking for some information, like stuff like what you talked about today is amazing, because it's maybe they might feel it's a stupid question, or maybe they asked before and they got a snarky response. But everyone has to start somewhere. Even myself, I'm not experienced about this stuff, so I learn a lot.
We'll have to have you on again, Arthur, and talk more in depth about some of this stuff. But before we finish this podcast, like I promised, we actually have a bunch of questions. So if you don't follow us on Instagram, I suggest that you do that, because on Instagram and on our Patreon as well, if you're a member, I oftentimes put up Ask Arthur or whatever guests we have on, and you can submit your own question and we can do it. So I thought we'd do maybe like 5 or 6. There was a lot of them, but a lot of the information we covered already and Arthur covered during this podcast already. So I'm not going to read those ones. So if you submitted one of those ones, no offense, not reading it. So here's a question from Rise and Find Fishing. He said, are browns in the tribs like a needle in a haystack, or do you have any tips to sift them out?
Oh, dude, like, when it comes to, there's different, if you want browns, go to the States. from the States. It's really hard to catch a brown here. And look at Dalhousie. Dalhousie gets tons of browns anywhere near Niagara and stuff like that. But catching one in like our side, our tributaries, it's scarce, man. I think I've caught like in my whole career of fishing, it's maybe like 10.
Yeah, and they weren't even that big. I've caught two.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I've caught two. And again, I don't fish like all the creeks, but in my home creek that I fished literally back before I was married, I used to fish like 3-4 days a week. And my biggest one I caught, actually like my biggest brown, it was, I didn't even measure it, but it was probably like 10 pounds. It was a big one, big hook jaw male.
Yeah.
And that was one I caught maybe must've been before I was married, 10 something years ago. And then before I caught maybe a 5-pounder, but yeah, they're really rare. They're in there.
They're in there.
I caught that 2-pounder once. For a guy who's only caught 5 steelhead, my ratio of browns to steelhead is pretty good.
Yeah, but yeah, they're pretty. I guess it really depends on the creek you're fishing. You notice that some of the creeks, they get more browns than others. So my advice would be if you're looking to catch a brown is, like Arthur said, fish the certain creeks or areas, or go to New York and catch some of the browns that they have down there. So here's a good question from Ted, who is actually the musician that recorded our awesome introduction.
Nice.
So this is his question. He says, what's the most memorable fishing experience you've ever had?
Oh, I think catching my first steelhead with my dad. I was like 9 years old.
He was in a diaper.
Yeah. And it was like literally last light. And I was just drifting this pool over and over. I haven't caught anything that day. And then bam, I caught this really big steelhead. And that's it. That started the love of steelheading. That's it. And I remember it to this day.
I remember my first steelhead too. I almost peed my pants. It was amazing. here's a question from Steelheader Jacob, who is another steelhead hammer as well.
I know who he is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He says, fall, winter, or spring steelhead, and why? If you had to pick one.
No, I got to pick two. So, okay. So it's fall. It's fall for sure. Those silver bullets cannot be beat, especially up north. And then you have ice out, which is literally like now. So,
yeah.
But if I were to pick one, you're right. I would choose fall. If any diehard steelheader will always choose fall.
Yeah. I've caught some of my nicest fish in November, December. Just beautiful fish. Here's actually a really good question from Joseph196. He said, how do you make sure you're getting into the strike zone for steelhead? And I know we didn't delve into like all shot patterns and all that stuff, because that would be a whole hour itself. But how do you make sure you're in the right strike zone? That's
another question. This is the fastest way you could do it. So you go to Bass Pro or something, get those little like weight detector things, and you just put it on your hook and throw it out there. And if you see where the depth is. So the way I dissect a river is I'll start at the bottom. And then, if I'm not getting anything, I'll work my way up. Remember, trout species, browns, whatever, they look up while eating, right? So that's my best advice for you. Just if you're dragging bottom, there you go. There's your indicator. And then move your float down, 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 and then see where you get bit, and then just try to replicate that over and over and over again. That's the best way.
Yeah, and you can oftentimes look at your float to see if it's dragging bottom. So if you're dragging bottom, your float, instead of going a certain way, it'll actually be dragging the opposite way. And then you know you have to, lower your float a bit to get it off the bottom. So there's tons of techniques that you can do. Again, I think one of the biggest things about beginner steelhead fishing that they do wrong is having their bait way too high. If the creek is 4 or 5 feet, deep, and your bait is like a foot under the surface because the current, and you're not using enough weight, those fish aren't even going to see your bait. Or even if they do see it, they're not going to, if the water's cold especially, they're not going to make the effort to go up into the fast water to grab it. So we'll have to do another episode all about that, because that is probably one of the most important techniques that you have to learn as a steelhead angler in moving water. So why don't we do one more? This one is from Peter Young Outdoors. And he says, ask Arthur where he fishes. So we're not going to give you spots. I remember on Instagram, I said, ask Arthur anything. And then I put a thing that says, don't ask for spots. And I literally had like 12 or 15 people say exact GPS coordinates. I was like, no.
Well, basically, without naming names, all of basically out east of the GTA, and then the northern part, like Georgian Bay, Lake Huron. And then I dabble in the States a lot, like Niagara, and then Western New York and stuff like that. So I fish pretty much everywhere, but Wherever life takes me.
Yeah. And it's not like, always people are like, oh, I don't know where to fish for steelhead. If you type in Google Steelhead Creeks, Ontario, it's not a secret. It's not like there's hidden lakes for bass. Like, there's only so many creeks. Now, I know there's some creeks that hit more than others, but do a little research. You will find areas to fish. It's not rocket science to find these creeks. Last question, and this is a really good question. This guy asks, Tuzi_Fisher, he says, what is your biggest advice to growing on Instagram for a new content creator?
One word, consistency. That's it. Let's say you guys can agree, consistency. There are some days where honestly I don't feel creative at all and I don't want to post anything. But again, I don't have, this is just me. This is for fun. I don't have sponsors, like I said. I don't have to answer anybody. So when I feel like it, I post. And when I don't. I just go fishing. You know what I mean? So I think to grow your Instagram account, A, be consistent with it, and B, put quality content out there. So either whether it be entertaining, informative, which is what you guys do, great job, and or you're showcasing like your photography or business, whatever the case might be, you have to basically give some sort of value. And I think that's what people, whether, like I said, the value is either entertainment, informative, a business, or something like that. That's what will make you grow. And hey, tell him that this never happened overnight. And so did Average Hunt Angler. Did not happen overnight.
Takes years. Yeah.
I started angling art in 2016. And that was the first photo that I ever posted. If people want to know, that was the first photo.
Three likes.
And, it went from there. And then people wonder how I grew a following. That's it. That's just how I post, because I genuinely like fishing. And I think people can relate to that. Because, like, again, like, I'm not really promoting anything. I just promote fishing and some of the things that everyday average anglers deal with, like tangles and all this other stuff that we do, right?
Definitely. And just to add to that, from my experience, like you said, consistency, create quality content. But I think the main thing for me is be real and have fun.
Yeah.
You can always find content that instantly you're turned off if it's fake. You know it's fake. Or it's unnatural. It just seems like forced. That stuff no one wants to watch. Just be real, be yourself. Unless you're a boring person, then try to be more fun. But be real, be yourself, and have fun. People all the time will send us messages, be like, oh, you and Andrew look like you have fun fishing. I'm like, we have so much fun fishing together. And sometimes we catch fish. So anyway, we'll have to have Angling Art back in the fall. And actually, I think what we're going to do in this podcast is we're going to have like regular episodes. Then we're going to have like in-depth for like, you know, people that are interested in the in-depth stuff. And we'll do like a part one and a part two. And we'll talk all about, you know, leaders and shot patterns and all that stuff. Because it would literally be a 2-hour podcast just talking about those things for sure.
Never enough time.
Yeah. So we'll have to have you on in the fall.
Definitely, brother.
Another thing we have to mention too, Jesse, is when you know that after this episode, you're going to get someone saying that, well, actually, steelhead are actually from only the ocean and not from Lake Ontario. God. It's just rainbow trout. So I just want to say it's socially acceptable to all the anglers around here that we call them steelhead when they come from one of the Great Lakes, which is essentially a freshwater ocean.
Hey, you know, I agree. Like, they're not steelhead. That's a fact. But we're going to call them that, and I don't care. We just do that to make the people out in BC mad. So we have a little bit of housekeeping. Which Andrew is going to handle before we ask Angling Art to do the quote of the week. But Andrew has the housekeeping. Go ahead.
So we just want to thank all of our patron members. You guys are fantastic. You help cover the regular monthly costs that we have that come up with doing this podcast. So we want to give a huge shout out to everyone who's in helping to support us with that. It's a huge, huge load off our minds. So we get to enjoy the making of the content a whole lot more. So that's amazing. Everyone who's listening to the podcast, especially on a regular basis, that's even better. And if you have the opportunity, if you haven't done so already, if subscribe, follow us on even our social media, but especially on our podcast platforms. And if you can, leave a review, leave a rating. That really helps us push to the top of those ranking charts, which in turn helps other people find us. And also is kind of cool for us to just look at the number, get even, you know, lower in digits as we get closer to number one. So one of these days we'll get there maybe, but you guys have helped us a lot in order to get that so far. So thank you for so much help already with doing that. Please keep doing so. We'd love to hear your feedback, and you can always reach us again at our social media. You can contact us directly if you have any other questions. Stay tuned for any other posts that we're going to put up about If you have any questions, to be featured in future podcast episodes.
For sure. Thanks, Andrew. And I just wanted to mention for the podcast charts, because again, it fluctuates every day. Every day, the podcast charts, they go up and down. So like, you know, we'll post a podcast and then after one or two days, we're usually in the top 10 in all of Canada for wilderness, which is fantastic. Sometimes we hit our record of hitting three out of all of Canada, which is amazing. Two above us is Meat Eater and Meat Eater. And I was like, what would it take to be number two? Well, we're not going to get 4 million monthly downloads. So we'll probably three is the best we'll ever get. So that's awesome. We do appreciate it. It's fantastic to look at the podcast charts and just be like, I can't even believe we're in the top 10. That's insane. Like some of these shows are huge. Yeah. So we, again, like Andrew said, we'd like to thank everyone for all the support. It's absolutely fantastic as well. So we are going to end this episode with, as tradition states, we always have the quote of the week. And to do that is going to be angling art.
It's funny, when I see you send me the email and you're like, quote of the day, I automatically had a quote ready. So I've been hearing this quote a lot this year, and yeah, it resonates with me. So basically the quote is, 90% of the fish get caught by 10% of the fishermen. That's the quote of the day.
So the quote of the day is, angling art is telling you he is that 10%. Just kidding.